You are listening to RudolfSteinerAudio.com. If you are listening to the podcast of this, it is located at RudolfSteiner.podbean.com. Please consider becoming a patron. As well, there are two publishing houses, SteinerBooks.org in America and RudolfSteinerPress.com in England, who are the sole publishers of Steiner into English and have given me permission to do these recordings. Please consider patronizing them as well. This is a reading of a collected works, volume 165 by Rudolf Steiner, a set of lectures, 13 lectures, entitled Unifying Humanity Spiritually Through the Christ Impulse, translated by Christian von Arnim. This is lecture 7, given in Dornach on the 1st of January, 1916. If yesterday, at New Year's Eve, it was good to immerse ourselves in some of the secrets of existence, in such things that are connected with great transcendental secrets, such as the annual transition from one year to the next, and the great cosmic New Year's Eve and cosmic New Year, if it was good yesterday, as I said, to immerse ourselves in these secrets, which address the depths of our soul far removed from the external world, it might be of particular importance, specifically at the start of the year, to let at least some of our great important obligations pass before our soul. These obligations are, however, connected with what we can know about the development of humanity through spiritual science. They are connected with the knowledge about the path which humanity must follow as it strides toward its future. We cannot recognize the obligations about which we are talking if we do not try to take a candid look at our time in various fields. That is also what we have repeatedly done in the course of our reflections. But it might be appropriate to put some of the things which we may already know about before our soul today already, at the start of a new year. Of course, my dear friends, all the things which pass before our soul in view of our materialistic time, with all its consequences, so that we know that spiritual science must provide the foundations to advocate in a higher way the proper progress of mankind, of course, all the things which we deem it necessary to do are so enormous, so incisive, so important. There is, in simple words, so much to do in the present time that it is inconceivable that we would be able, with our weak forces, to do a lot of the things that need to be done. It is nevertheless important that we show an interest in what has to be done, that our interest grows in what is necessary for humanity, specifically in our time. Because that is where the start has to be made, that a group, however small, becomes interested in what humanity needs, that it obtains, and be it ever such a small group, a clear insight into what, in the development of our time, are forces of decline, harmful forces. Particularly at the start of the year, it might be good to direct our interest a little toward the objective great interests of humanity, away from our own personal affairs. To this end, as I said, clear insights are required into what moves on a downward trajectory in the development of humanity. We only need to transfer thoughts that passed before our soul in the last few days to the current situation, and we will find a lot, or at least we will find some of the things that humanity particularly needs in the present time. We saw how far-reaching wisdom disappeared from humanity at a particular developmental moment, how Gnostic wisdom was lost, and how now we have to work toward a situation in which a knowledge of spiritual things arises once again, in accordance, however, with our more advanced time. We also drew attention, throughout last autumn, to the profound reasons why the wave of materialism rose particularly high just in the 19th century. And I had to keep emphasizing that the spiritual scientific insights into the rise of this wave of materialism should in no way lead to a failure to recognize or a misunderstanding of the great progress of outer materialistic science. It should indeed be recognized, and I keep emphasizing, that such materialistic progress of natural science has to be recognized by us. But we are particularly obliged to understand that in the course of the 19th century, up to our day, the great progress in the outer material field was associated with a regression in the power of thinking, in clear, sound thinking. Clear, sound thinking has receded particularly in science. Specifically, where science is being pursued, clear and secure, content-filled thinking has receded. And since the belief in authority has never been stronger than in our time, although people refuse to believe it, this desolate situation with regard to sound thinking has spread to the widest circles, to the whole of popular thought. We live in an age of disordered thinking, and at the same time in the age of the most blind belief in authority. How much do people today suffer from the impression that they have to believe? They have to accept the authorities or sanctioned by the external powers. People want to be told whether they are entitled to do this or that. People have, mostly, stopped thinking about the fact that this might be a concern of the individual, that people themselves might think about it. No. People go to those in whom, quote, all laws and rights are passed down like an external disease from one generation to the next, close quote, and allow themselves to be instructed without making any claim to thinking themselves about the things of which they are being informed. Because it is considered the right thing to do, to follow authority blindly. People become ill. They completely refuse to make the effort to know anything about the simplest things. Why should they? After all, we have state-certified medics, and it is their business to concern themselves with the body. This body is actually no concern of ours at all. If people want a decision about some other question, they go to those who are supposed to know about it, the theologians, the philosophers, to this person or another. Anyone who continues this train of thought themselves will find innumerable other things within them which are based in the blindest belief in authority. And if they cannot find anything, my dear friends, and please don't be angry with me when I say that they have an all the greater dose of such a belief in authority, the less they find in themselves. But I would like to begin by showing how insufficient, inadequate thinking has crept particularly into the most subtle areas of intellectual life all over the world, without distinction of nation, race, color. How a certain element of inadequate thinking exists particularly in the most subtle areas of our intellectual, cultural life. Take the way some philosophy has developed. Who would not be convinced today, on the basis of a belief in authority, going through many channels, that the human being simply cannot get to the, quote, thing in itself, close quote, but only has access to the outer appearance, the impressions on the senses, the impression on the soul of things? We can only have access to the, in quotes, effect of things. We cannot have access to the thing in itself. That is something which has become the basic outlook of 19th century thinking. I describe this whole miserable situation in the chapter in my title, Riddles of Philosophy, called, titled, The World as Illusion. Anyone who studies this chapter will be able to find my overview of this whole miserable situation. Human beings can only have access to effects. They cannot get to the thing in itself. The thing in itself remains unknown. The finest thinkers of the 19th century in particular, if finest is the right word here, have been infected by this thing in itself, which has to remain unknown. If we now look at the trains of thought which underlie what I have just said, we find the following. People demonstrate, rigorously demonstrate, that the I, EYE, can only reflect what it can produce out of itself by means of its nerve and other processes. If, therefore, an outer impression comes, it responds in its specific way. We can only get as far as the impression, not the thing which makes the impression on the eye. Through the ear, we can only get as far as the auditory impression, not to what makes that impression, and so on. And in this way, it is only the impressions from the outer world which act on the senses of the soul. Since Lange, who believed he had determined these things for certain fields, for color and sound and such like, it has now entered the whole of people's thinking about human beings can only obtain impressions of the world, can only obtain effects. Is that incorrect? It is certainly not incorrect, because, as I have often emphasized, it is not a matter of whether something is correct or incorrect. But quite different things come into play. Is it right that only images, only impressions on our senses can be called forth by things? Certainly that is right. There can be no doubt about it. But something quite different is actually the case. Let me clarify this with a comparison. When we stand in front of a mirror, and a second person also stands in front of that mirror, then it can in no way be denied that what one sees in it is an image of oneself and an image of the other person. It is images which we see in the mirror, no doubt about it. And to that extent, all our sensory impression are also all images, because the object first had to make an impression on us. And it is that impression, our reaction, as we would say, which comes to consciousness. We can therefore compare that quite correctly with the images that we have in the mirror, because those are also images. This way of thinking of Lange and Kant is quite right, to claim that human beings are faced with images. But we are then faced with the conclusion that human beings cannot get to the thing in itself with anything that is real, because they are dealing with images. What is this based on? It is based merely on the failure to pursue the thought further from that prerequisite, that a halt is made at the prerequisite, which is correct. Such thinking is not incorrect, but it is truly frozen. Because these are proper images that we have in the mirror. But say the person who is standing next to me, with whom I am looking into the mirror, gives me a slap in the mirror. Will I say then, although they are just images, the one mirror image has given the other mirror image a slap? Here, what happens in the images points to something very real. If our thinking is not frozen, but is alive, and is actually connected with things, with realities, then we know that Lange's and Kant's prerequisites are correct, that we are dealing with images everywhere. But if these images relate to living circumstances, then these living circumstances really express those things which are needed to enter the tangible thing in itself. So it is not the case that the gentlemen concerned, who have led thinking astray, start from the wrong prerequisites. But everything is based on the fact that we are dealing with frozen thinking, with thinking where people just say correct, 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 and stop there. Flexibility, vitality, is missing from such disordered 19th century thinking. 19th century thinking is frozen, truly frozen. Let us take another example. I have often told you things in the past year about an honest thinker, Mautner, the great language critic. With Kant, it was a, quote, critique of ideas, close quote. Mautner goes further. What comes later always has to go further. He developed a, quote, critique of language, close quote. I gave you a few small examples from this critique of language, in the course of the autumn, indeed in the course of the year, you will recall. Today, such a man has many followers. He was a journalist before he joined the philosophers. According to an old proverb, quote, dog don't eat dog, close quote. Not only do they not eat each other, but hungry dogs are even pointed toward a meal by other dogs, if those other dogs happen to be journalists. As I said, I certainly do not want in any way to call into question the honesty, indeed the thoroughness and depth in quotes, as understood in our time, of such thinkers, because I have to keep emphasizing that it is incorrect to say that we are criticizing natural science or any other endeavor here. I only wish to characterize it. Hence, let me say expressly, Mauthner is an honorable man. So are they all honorable men. But let us look at a line of thought which reflects the critique of language. He says, for example, that human knowledge is restricted. That is what Mauthner says, restricted. Why restricted in his sense? Well, because what human beings learn about the world enters their soul through the senses. Certainly not very profound, but nevertheless undoubtedly true. Everything from the external world, the world of the senses, enters through the senses. But now Mauthner conceives of the idea that these senses are random senses. In other words, that instead of the eyes and ears and other senses, which humans have, they might well not have had them, and could have had other senses. Then the world out there would look quite different. A very popular thought indeed among some philosophers of our time. And thus it is actually a coincidence that we have the particular senses we have, and so is the world. If we had different senses, we would have a different world. Random senses. One person who parroted Fritz Mauthner said roughly the following, for example, the world is immeasurable. But how can human beings know anything about this immeasurable world? They only have impressions through their random senses. Some things drop into the soul through these random senses, the gateways of these random senses. And there they are ordered, while outside the immeasurable world continues, and human beings cannot know anything of the laws according to which this immeasurable world proceeds. How can human beings believe that what they learn about the world, through their random senses, can have anything to do with the great secrets of the world out there? That is what one imitator of Fritz Mauthner said, who does, however, not consider himself to be an imitator, but one of the cleverest men of the present time. We can translate this line of thought into another one. I will stay complete within the character of this way of thinking, but only translate the thought into another one. We can never actually have an idea of what such a genius as Goethe gave to humanity, because such a genius as Goethe cannot do anything other than to express what he has to give to humanity by grouping it into the 22 or 23 random letters we have, which are grouped on the paper by their own laws. How can we ever know anything about the content produced by the genius Goethe through what is grouped on the paper by the 23 random letters? As clever as the person would be who believes that we cannot obtain anything of Goethe and his results, because the genius had to express all his brilliance through the 23 letters A, B, and so on, as clever the person would be who says that the world out there is immeasurable, and we cannot know it, because we have nothing in us other than what enters through our random senses. It is, however, the case that such disordered thinking exists, not just in the fields I have spoken about now. It only occurs there in a particularly crass form, but it exists everywhere. It is at work in all our human interaction. It is at work in the deeply sad events of the present, because they would not be as they are if not all the thinking of people were imbued with a kind of thinking which is only expressed particularly crassly in such a field as I have indicated. We will never be able to take a proper interest in this field, I mean the field of human activity, of true progress, as properly pursued in the spirit of spiritual science, if we lack the will to look at these things properly, if we do not want to see what humanity needs. We repeatedly hear the objections with regard to the results of spiritual science, that they are only accessible to those who can look clairvoyantly into the spiritual world. And people will never believe that this is not true, but that we can truly come to an understanding with the thinking of what the clairvoyant fetches out of the spiritual world. But we should not be surprised that people today cannot understand with their thinking what the clairvoyant has fetched out of the spiritual world, if such thinking takes the form as has been described. Such thinking trumps everything else. Such thinking has flowed into all fields. And this is so not because it would be impossible to understand the results of spiritual science with the thinking, but because people allow themselves to be infected by the weak-minded, the disordered thinking of the present. The important thing is that spiritual science should encourage us to engage in intensive, strong-minded thinking. And spiritual science is very suitable for that, my dear friends. Naturally, for as long as we only receive spiritual science by merely allowing ourselves to be told what things are about, we will not get very far with the kind of thinking which we should, let us say, donate to the future of humanity. But if we endeavor really to understand, really to grasp things, then we will make progress. But something of this disordered thinking of the present has affected the understanding of spiritual science. I have demonstrated to you how such disordered thinking actually works. I said that effects only come from the outside world, so we cannot get to the thing in itself. Then the thought immediately freezes. People do not want to go further. They no longer see that what the images are in a living context leads beyond their being merely pictorial in character. Let me read that sentence again. They no longer see that what the images are in a living context leads beyond their being merely pictorial in character. This is now transferred to an understanding of spiritual science. Because people are completely infected by such a thinking, they say to themselves, quote, what the spiritual scientist says on page A, B, or C is spiritual scientific fact. That is inaccessible unless one has the gift of clairvoyance, close quote. And then they stop thinking, whether they might not be able to access these things by relating the things the spiritual scientists say to one another. They make the same mistake that the world makes today. The terrible thing is that there is so little understanding of and insight into this fundamental error of contemporary thinking. And there really is very little such understanding. It reaches into our most mundane thoughts, asserts itself there as much as in the most advanced guard of philosophical or scientific thought. And people rarely realize the immense obligation which actually arises from such an insight into this fact. How important it is to have an interest in these matters. How irresponsible it is to blunt an interest in these matters. Now it is a fact that in the course of recent centuries, purely external sensory observation has become dominant in science. That people place the main value on those things alone which they can observe in the laboratory, the hospital, or zoo. I have often emphasized the value which should be accorded to that. Certainly, immense progress has been made through this scientific method. But such progress, in particular, has led to a total neglect of the thinking. And that gives rise to the duty not to allow those to come to power in the world who strive for power on the basis of a purely materialistic experimental knowledge. And power is what these people want. We are already at the stage today that as a result of the most brutal claim to power of materialistic scholarship, everything else is to be removed from the world that is not materialistic scholarship. And those who, today, appeal also to the outer powers in the harshest way to ensure that their outer materialism is given a privileged and patented position, include the people in particular who stand on the ground of materialist science alone. It is a matter of understanding how the balance of power in the world works. It is not enough for us to be interested purely in our own personal circumstances, but we must develop an interest in the great affairs of humanity. It is true that we will not be able to do a great deal today as individuals or indeed as a small society, but the matter has to take its start from such small beginnings. What use is it if there are many today who say they have no confidence in official medicine and seek what they do have trust in by all manner of other paths? That is not what things are about to begin with. All of that is only personal endeavor in our own affairs. What matters is to have an interest that alongside today's materialistic medicine, the thing that one trusts also has rights. Otherwise, it means making the matter worse from day to day. It is not just a matter of someone who has little confidence in today's so-called scientific medicine going to see someone else. In that way, they put the other person into a difficult position if they are not interested in creating a situation in which the other person is also entitled under law to be interested in the general human progress of the affairs of humanity. It may well be the case that today or tomorrow we are not yet able to do more than have an interest in the matter, but we have to carry such an interest in the great affairs of humanity in our souls if we want to understand the spiritual scientific movement in the truest sense of the word. We still often believe that we understand the great interests of humanity because we often interpret our personal interests as if they were the great interests of humanity. We have to search deeply, deeply in the depths of our soul if we want to discover within ourselves the extent to which we are actually dependent on the blind belief in authority of the present time. How thoroughly we are dependent on it. Strolling along in complacency is what prevents us from being at least inwardly ignited and inflamed to begin with for the great interests of humanity. But it is this which we can inscribe into our soul as the best New Year's greeting. Becoming ignited by, becoming enthusiastic about the great interests of human progress, of true human freedom. For as long as we adopt a position, which means that somewhere we still have something which makes us believe that the person who is proclaimed a great man by the world must have some correct thoughts about something, for as long as we have not torn this belief, which is connected with the disordered thinking organism of our time, and is raised by the latter, thoroughly out of our soul. For that amount of time, we have not yet acquired such an interest in the general great affairs of humanity. The words I say are not directed in some way against individual great men. I know there are many who say, particularly when such things are referred to in public lectures, that current natural science is being attacked by spiritual science. Figures of authority are being attacked. I choose precisely such figures of authority, of which, on the other hand, I can say that they are important figures of authority in the present time, great men, in order to show precisely how in the great personalities of the present those things assert themselves which must be removed root and branch by spiritual science. And even if we are not great men, we can develop something of an eye for seeing the disordered thinking in great men, which is reared particularly through the progress through the brilliant side of current experimental science. One example, which can truly stand for many. Let me take a book which comes from one of the most important men of the present time. It has also been translated into German. So as I said, let no one say that in some way I do not wish to recognize someone's greatness. I say expressly, the book comes from one of the most important men of the present time in the field of experimental science. I open the book at a random page, the introduction to the second volume, which, after specific questions of current cosmology have been discussed by the great man, deals with the way belief systems have evolved, with the history of the development of belief systems. And he says roughly that people at the time of the ancient Egyptians, at the time of the ancient Greeks, the Romans, attempted to understand the world in one way or another. But then contemporary natural science came along in the last four centuries. It swept away everything that came before it. It finally won the big prize and found the real truth, which now only needs to be consolidated. I have already emphasized many times that it is not so much what these people say in detail. It is rather that they are then immediately gripped by a demonic, luciferic, or Ahrimanic disposition. They immediately become luciferic or Ahrimanic. And so we then read at the end of this introduction the following very peculiar words. Pay close attention to what is revealed in an undoubtedly great and important man of the present time, who says, after he has praised scientific knowledge, quote, the period of sad decline lasted until the reawakening of humanity at the start of the modern age. The latter put the art of printing at the service of scholarship, and the contempt for experimental work disappeared from the views of educated people. But it was slow progress, given the resistance from old preconceived ideas and the lack of collaboration among researchers. The impediments have meanwhile disappeared, and at the same time, the number of people and their resources working in the service of science has rapidly increased. Hence the magnificent progress of recent times. Close quote. And now, the final sentences of this introduction. Quote, occasionally we hear it said that we live in the best of all possible worlds. It is difficult to say anything well-founded about that. But we, at least the scientific researchers, can claim with complete certainty that we live in the best of all possible times, in the firm hope that the future will only get better still. Close quote. And now we come to the bit where, please excuse the harsh words, we either fall off our chair laughing when we read it, or we hit the roof. Now, in our age, the person concerned, of course, wants to allow the words, which have been spoken in the past about nature and the world in the research of great men, to pass before his mind's eye in review. So he says, quote, in the firm hope that the future will only get better still, we can say in the words of the great authority on nature and judge of human character, Goethe, subquote, it is a great delight on the spirit of the ages to set our sight, to see how wise men have thought before us, and we've finally made such magnificent progress. Close subquote. Continue quote. I think that's a complete close of quote there. I think this is Steiner again. In all seriousness, my dear friends, a great man here refers to his reflections to a quotation from the, quote, great authority on nature and judge of human character, Goethe, close quote, that is to the words of Wagner, whom Goethe, as we know, has say in Faust, quote, excuse me, but it is a great delight on the spirit of the ages to set our sight, to see how wise men have thought before us, and we finally made such magnificent progress, close quote. It is Wagner who says these words, but Faust replies to him, and perhaps he may say what Faust says in the spirit of great authority on nature and judge of human character, Goethe, quote, oh, yes, indeed, to furthest stars, close quote. It is particularly suitable for the man who has also made it, quote, no further, to furthest stars, unquote, namely, quote, oh yes, indeed, to furthest stars. My friend, those ages past are like a book with seven seals. What you, as spirit of the ages, name is just the spirit of the gentleman, in whom the times they are reflected. So, often then, there's disarray. People turn tail and run away. A rubbish pit and lumber room, at most a song and dance dramatic, with maxims fitting and pragmatic, best suited to the mouths of puppets. Close quote. And so on. Quote, let him not be a tinkling fool. Close quote. It says a little bit earlier. Thus writes one of the greatest men of the present time in 1907, who has made it to furthest stars, and who has also managed, in looking back at all the others who were active before him, to use the words expressed by the, quote, great authority on nature and judge of human character, close quote, Goethe, quote, it is a great delight on the spirit of the ages to set our sight, close quote. You laugh. But it would be nice if this laughter were also always to sound where such disordered thinking is applied, within those situations in which power is exercised today. Because this is an example which really proves how those who in particular stand firmly, stand securely on the ground of today's scientific worldview, who are even associated with great progress in this field, who have made great progress themselves, how they can produce disordered thinking. And it proves that what we call materialistic science today need not exclude at all the most superficial thinking there is. One can think in the most disordered way today and be a great man in the field of external science. But one has to know that, and one must be able to behave in that way. That is a signature of our time. But if it continues in this way, that someone is marked out as a great man, is deemed to be a great authority, and what he has to say in one field or another is quoted untested as something which probably is true, then we will never overcome the great plight of our time. I am convinced that innumerable people today will read across the section I have just read out to you and not laugh about it, even though this section is one which, in a preeminent sense, indicates where the profound problems in our time lie. Problems which lead to the decline of humanity in the present, and where a start has to be made with regard to the things which humanity needs. Despite the immeasurably great progress made by external science, it must be recognized that it has become possible for precisely the greatest scientists of the 19th century up to and including our day to have become the worst dilettantes with regard to all philosophical questions. It is to the great detriment of our time that people now do not see through that, do not see that the greatest scientists of the 19th century had to be just the worst dilettantes with regard to philosophical questions, if they wholly give themselves over to the spirit which rules in materialistic sciences, and that people chase after these great personalities, even when these great personalities do not hold forth just about their laboratory experiments and clinical studies, but when they talk about the mysteries of the cosmos. That is why we have in parallel with the popularization of science, which is beneficial in the best sense, useful in the best sense, a simultaneous decline in all philosophical questions, disordered thinking which is spreading like an epidemic, because it is eating away at everything, and because ultimately it goes back to the terrible dilettantism, particularly of those who are great men. This is where the tasks lie, with which we at least have to unite our interests, my dear friends, even if, to begin with, we cannot do anything. We at least have to see through the situation, and have to clearly understand that above all it would lead to much, much more sorrowful times than they are at present if the things which have been indicated here are not seen through by people, if such disordered thinking were not to be replaced once again by clear and sound thinking in humanity. It all goes back to this disordered thinking, that which we encounter as an external, often very sad phenomenon, would not exist if it were not for this disordered thinking. It seemed to me that these things, which are connected with the character of the conviction, connected with our task as a whole, should be spoken about, particularly at the start of the new year. Because if we get into the habit of looking in an unbiased way at the way in which people think today, and how this thinking exercises a powerful influence in absolutely all situations, only then will we obtain a picture of what needs to be done and what humanity particularly needs. But for that, we have to overcome quite some longing for disorganization, quite some longing for laziness and lethargy. Must, to begin with at least, be able to imagine that the task of a spiritual scientific movement is more than merely listening to or reading lectures. It is to familiarize ourselves with the appropriate ideas, as I have to keep emphasizing. Of course, there is not much we can do, to begin with, as individuals in a small society. But our own thinking has to move in the right direction. It must know what things are about, must not be open to the danger of, if I may use the trite expression, falling for the philosophical dilettantism, specifically of those who are the greatest men of our age in external science. Great men who are, however, dilettantes with regard to philosophical questions, establish all kinds of philosophical societies, monistic ones, and God knows what else, without the inherent contradiction becoming clear, which would arise if people at least understood that when people like that found philosophical societies, it is no different to saying, quote, "I will have a suit made by that person because he has shown himself to be an outstanding cobbler," close quote. It is a nonsense. But it is just as much a nonsense if a great chemist or a great psychologist is accepted as an authority on questions of world conception. They cannot be blamed for doing it themselves, because they cannot, of course, know how inadequate they are. But that they are accepted is connected with the great problems of our time. It seems to me, my dear friends, that our feelings about matters of eternity might be the subject of a New Year's Eve reflection, and that the things that must immediately be done with regard to the affairs of the day, what it is necessary for us to do with regard to our immediate obligations, might be connected with a New Year's reflection. So it does appear to me that the tone of a New Year's reflection and the tone of a New Year's Eve reflection are related to one another in the same way as the words which I have spoken today are related to the words which I spoke yesterday. The end of Lecture 7.